And welcome in to some After Hours. Jay Binkley with my dude, Chris Unocero. Hence, character concerns, Chris Unocero. But I promise we won't talk draft. I don't know if we'll talk it at all tonight. We'll talk about rookies probably. What's up, Chris?
How's it going, man?
It's going good, my friend. We just dropped our podcast yesterday, Character Concerns. We've started it back up again. And we'll continue, of course, all the way through next year when we get to the OTAs, and we'll cover our third draft this year. So far, so good, would you say? These rookies looking good for the Chiefs and also all around the league. How about A.D. Mitchell? He's out there doing his deal, man. He's on it. He's on clips all the time.
I mean, I think me and you expected that. We really liked him. He was a guy that towards the end of the offseason, right before the draft, that was the guy that we were really looking at for the Chiefs. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of really talented receivers in this draft class, and I think the guys that were taken in the first round, I think most of those guys, I think you can be pretty confident they're going to be stars. So it's not surprising that you start to see some of those guys trickle out there and see some things from them that's really impressive.
Well, one thing for sure is Xavier Worthy is living up to the billing. They're spreading that ball down the field. You got Hollywood Brown back today. He's back from the illness. So you got the trio of Rice, Worthy, and Hollywood Brown together for the first time in a training camp practice.
Yeah, and you know, right now there's been some like injury issues and whatnot, and with different guys or illness or things like that. So it's good that they're starting to get some reps together. But I mean, you'd like to before the regular season, like by week one, you'd like to see them get their chemistry worked out a little bit more at training camp, so that they can kind of be full go by the time they get to week one.
Yeah, you'd like to see which week one in preseason's coming up August 10th. So training camp rolls on for the Chiefs. They had an off day yesterday. We'll get into much more of what's going on at training camp in a little bit. But you enjoying these Royals, Chris? I know no Royals tonight. I know that you do some Royals work here and there, but you enjoying this season? I know we've talked about it before, but the Royals sweep the White Sox today 10-3. And the White Sox, hey, last time they play them this year, they were 12-1 this year against the White Sox. The White Sox are steaming pile of crap. That's exactly what they are.
Yeah,
they're an embarrassment to the sport.
I mean, look, man, there's going to be bad teams in baseball. I'm enjoying the fact that the Royals are getting these wins. I'd like for them to get some wins against some better teams than just the White Sox. But
you
got to
fatten your record against losing teams like this, man.
I'm not going to complain about them doing what they should be doing, which is beating up on bad baseball teams. So, I want to see this translate into the more into the series against the more competitive teams. But this is a good I think it's a good mindset, a good situation to be in if you're the Royals, because hey, at least you know you can beat the bad teams. Like, at least you know that.
You've got to keep them down, man. You got to keep the bad teams down. That's exactly what they're doing. There's just no contest. You see the difference between the Royals and the White Sox. The White Sox, by the way, Chris, are on pace for the worst record ever in Major League history. They've got 27 wins this year. Did you know that is 18 games back behind the other losingest team in baseball, except for the Rockies. Rockies in the National League have just 11 more wins than the White Sox, but 18 game difference between the White Sox and anybody else in the American League. They are, Chris, an amazing 56 games under 500.
Yeah, that's not good.
I mean, that team, when you watch the team, they blow saves, more saves than anybody else. I'm sure that Paul DeJong, very happy he got moved over the White Sox to the Royals. I'm sure there's a very nice day for Paul just being able to switch dugouts like that.
It has to be really – I mean, look, this is one of those situations where, like, you know, like in baseball, like here in Kansas City, like when the football team and the Chiefs are bad, the fans revolt and they're angry and they refuse to allow the Chiefs to have a losing team for a long period of time.
Well, it was said with the over and unders that this is going to be the White Sox are a bad team.
But like in the case of like baseball, I think in more instances, the fans are like, whatever, we're not going to pay attention.
Yeah.
As opposed to them being furious. Like there's some fan bases that are like Cubs fans. They're furious if the team is below average. And same thing with like Cardinals fans, because for them, like that's their team. But I imagine there's probably not a ton of like White Sox fans that are bent out of shape, because I don't think there's a whole lot of hardcore White Sox fans because they haven't been that good for a long time.
And there was an expectations on the team going right into the season.
There were expectations a few years ago, and then they didn't live up to it. And that was really the only time that they've really had a lot of hope. I mean, maybe since the World Series in 05.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, they've always been formidable, though. I mean,
yeah, they've had some teams where they were respectable, but like they've never consistently been like one of the better teams.
I mean, there's
baseball.
A reason why I call them America's Booty Call, because they clearly are. When the White Sox come calling, you know what to do.
Yeah.
They are 3 a.m. bar chick is what the White Sox
they
are. 100% what they are.
They are like one of the FCS teams on NCAA. Like,
FCS West?
Yeah, FCS. Yeah, like, okay. Like, that's basically a bye week. I know I'm going to be able to.
Sometimes they stand and beat you, though, right? North Dakota State, they stand and beat you.
I'm talking about like on NCAA football. I'm not talking about in real life.
Oh, NCAA, not real.
On NCAA football, you know, it's like, okay, this is a bye week. Like, this is gonna be a dub here. Like, if I lose to FCS Southwest, there's a problem with my team. Like, that's usually how it is on there. That's kind of what the White Sox are.
I would just be incredibly embarrassed to be a fan or spending any money for that. And they ought to discount the fans' tickets, the ones that they have. 14,000 there today, but 56 games under 500. Come on, man. They're not even trying at some point. It doesn't even look like they're trying at some point. But you know what? The Royals do what you do. You keep bad teams down. You know what? They're done playing the White Sox now, so it's going on. But Bobby Witt Jr., we should all appreciate the greatness that is Bobby Witt Jr. This from OptiStats, Chris. He finishes July with 44 hits and a 49 batting average. 49 batting average. The last MLB player with at least that many hits and that high of a batting average in a calendar month was Lou Gehrig. In June 1930, he had 55 hits and a 495 average. That's pretty good to be compared going back to Lou Gehrig for the Kansas City Royals. But as Dave Holtzman, who's with the Royals, used to be with Bally Sports, tweets out, Bobby Witt will in the month of July, 49 batting average in exactly 100 plate appearances. Here's the highest average in any Royals month in history. Bobby, 49, July 2023. July 2024 is what it should say. But Joe Randa, 442, July 1999. And Willie Wilson, 441 in July 1980. In your mind, Chris, if you had an MVP vote, is it him? Or is it the guy with 39 home runs sitting right there, about 100 RBI, and Aaron Judge? Or are you going with the second favorite on FanDuel, Bobby Witt Jr.?
You know, if you'd asked me this a week ago, I would have said Judge.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now, when you just consider the effect that I think Bobby Witt Jr. is having on the team, where it's like, if you look at like Aaron Judge, he's not the only great player they got on the Yankees.
They got a few, and Juan Soto ain't too bad himself.
Like, you got a squad up there. Like, but when we talk about like most valuable player, you look at a team like the Royals. Like, we obviously see a lot of deficiencies. We see deficiencies in the bullpen. We see their, you know, like half of their lineup is probably underperforming based on what I think the team was expecting and what we were hoping for. And I think the fact that you've got a guy like Bobby who is playing out of this world and has been one of the big catalysts for them winning a lot of games here. I mean, I don't know how you could watch him play or even just look at his statistics and whatnot over the month of July and think that he's not the best player playing this season right now. So, yeah, I think just considering the position that the Royals are in where they don't have a bunch of guys that are you know, killing it right now. They've got a few guys who are playing well, and then you've got a guy in Bobby Witt Jr. right now who is – by and large, the best player in the game right now, just for this season. I don't really know how you could say that he's anything other than first place right now.
I agree 100% with what you said. I know we argue a lot when it comes to NFL takes, and well, we used to. More and more we get along. But,
yeah, probably, yeah.
but I agree with everything you said because, again, he is the catalyst for why this team is right now has the third wild card position. It's because of Bobby Witt Jr. Every time this guy comes to the plate, it's special. Anytime he's on the base path, you don't know what's going to happen. Bobby Witt Jr. is truly one of those guys that you don't know what's going to happen each time, every game. He makes a great defensive play. He'll hit home run. He'll steal a bag. He gets multiple hits. What's he got, 46 multiple hit games right now? I mean, the tear he's on right now is absolutely
he's approaching
ridiculous.
Like 50% of his games with multiple hits. Like that's the thing you don't like. A lot of people don't. It's almost at 50% of his games with multiple hits. Like today they walked the White Sox walked
him
a
bunch. It was two hit wet again.
Yeah, yeah, they walked him a bunch because they were like, oh man, this dude's he's killing us.
I mean, this truly is two hit wet.
Yeah, like it's just it's gotten to a point, and I don't think we should be calling him that just because
I'm kidding about that. Yeah, that was
not even
that was
not even that just because like he's doing more than just like Witt was just an average guy, but like Bobby Witt Jr. is bringing power into the equation. But like I look at the way that he is playing right now, and you just don't see players carry a roster the way that Bobby Witt Jr. is doing right now.
Yeah.
I mean it's not unlike what you see in like whenever you have like a basketball, like an NBA team that isn't really that great, and then they add that one great player, or they have a player on their team that elevates their game, and they just out of nowhere come up and they're in contention, kind of like the Thunder from this past season, where they elevated from being a bottom of the playoffs team to being the top team in the West, and it was because mainly because you had a guy like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and he really stepped his game up, and the guys around him stepping their game up, but Shea was like the guy there. It's kind of like in that situation, and that right there is a big reason why I think you got to give Bobby Witt Jr. right now the nod. I know like the gaudy home run numbers and RBI numbers from Judge,
and it's a different place to play. I mean, right. It's a bandbox. I mean, the wind comes in there. I mean, there's that ball sails.
Right. And it's just like
right field.
You just look at what Bobby Witt Jr. is doing, and he's right now he's carrying this team. And I just don't know how you could not have him as your favorite for the MVP right now.
I mean, just an all around player. I mean, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch that Kansas City has both Bobby Witt Jr. and Patrick Mahomes to watch. He's one of those special players. I mean, it's literally one of those things where you just want to, like every day, you got to see what Bobby Witt Jr. is doing. It's been the stuff that's it's hard to quantify just how good he's been. I know JJ Piccolo spoke about him earlier today. I'll bring you the best of that when he was on with Cody and Gold. MLB Network has been totally glossing over Bobby Witt Jr. and what he's doing. Manager Q today joins Fesco in the Morning, Dusty and Bob each and every Wednesday, was talking about him too. Then George Brett, when he was talking about Bobby Witt Jr. The other day with Carrington.
I'm amazed every time I go to the ballpark. And, we had Bo Jackson weekend about 3 weeks ago, and I made a comment, I never missed one of his at-bats. Well, I never miss one of Bobby's at-bats either. I go to a lot of the games. Sometimes I leave early. But if Bobby Witt's coming up to bat in the bottom of the eighth inning in Kauffman Stadium, I'll stick around at least to watch him hit. He's an amazing athlete. He plays baseball, I think, the way I did. He runs everything out. He's always thinking about the next base. Obviously, I think he's a lot more talented than I am because of his speed and his arm, his accuracy, and the things that he can do, the power at such an early age. I didn't develop power till I was about 25, 26, but he's got power at 23. He had power last year at 22. But he's, in my opinion, one of the best players in baseball.
And that's coming from George Brett. And keep in mind, Bobby Witt Jr. won the high school home run derby, and was a finalist there, final two in the actual home run derby this July. Did you happen to hear what Steve Stone, the White Sox broadcast, said about him?
No.
This is what they had to say about him the other night.
Look, I know that there's a guy in Los Angeles signed for $700 million, and there's no doubt that Ohtani is a wonderful player. I'd rather have Bobby Witt Jr. than Ohtani? Yes. And the reason is...
Steve Stone, hot take.
Well, number one, because you've got yourself a shortstop, which is a man in the middle of just about everything. You have a guy that hits just about, maybe just as well as Ohtani. He doesn't have the power of Ohtani, no doubt about it. Obviously, he's not going to pitch. But this guy is going to play every day for you, and he's going to play in the field at a critical position. You try to win anything in this game without a shortstop, you're not going to win. So, it's 6-1, half dozen of the other. A lot of people would say that Ohtani's bat and the fact that he can pitch would put him above. For me, I want that guy because I've never seen, in all the time I've seen that guy right there, he has never dogged one step, never, anywhere. And that play he just made from shortstop, there's not many guys in baseball anywhere that could make that play.
How many wins games? Going back to George Brett, what he said, you know, even Steve Stone there. I mean, the White Sox were just, the broadcast just gushing about Bobby Witt Jr. It's hard to have a bad word to say about him because he does run out every single play. He just enjoys to play. Like the boys are playing some ball, right? Like he just likes to show up at the ballpark and play. That's all he really cares about. It's very Mahomes-like, where you just enjoy the game. He didn't do advertisements last year like Mahomes didn't do in his first year. You know, he just kind of, let me prove some things, and he'll gradually do it. But he just likes to play, Chris. It's just one of those guys you just enjoy. It's, and I know the Mahomes stuff comes out. Mostly he's got a long way to go to get to that stature for sure. But loving the game, very similar.
I hate the Mahomes comparisons because I don't think there's a baseball player that can have the kind of impact that Mahomes has.
No.
It's just not. Like, Mike Trout was at one point the best player in the game, and he's never won a playoff game in his career. Like, it's just, like, there's a reason why Shohei Ohtani dipped out of Anaheim and went up to L.A. proper, because they wasn't doing any winning down there.
Like, I'm not making comparisons the way they play. I'm just saying the way they love the game.
No, I'm just saying that a lot of people have been doing that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like
tough to cross sports like that.
Yeah, and it's just like no baseball player has the impact that Mahomes has. He may be like this transcendental talent at that position, especially for a shortstop, because we usually don't see shortstops with this kind of power, this kind of combination of power, speed, defense, hitting for average, things like that. We don't see a player with this many tools at that position. Usually they're outfield and whatnot. But I think the Mahomes comparisons, I think usually like him being that transformative for the game, no baseball player is that transformative. Like the kind of impact that guys like Mahomes have, guys like Michael Jordan or LeBron, like that's something that transcends the sport. And I don't know if any baseball player is going to be able to transcend the sport with the way that the game is set up.
I mean, it's ridiculous. All the multiple hit games that he has, just fun to watch, yeah. But just to have that superstar in baseball and them homes, that superstar in football, is just fun for this town and with the Royals. Looks like they might try to make October pretty fun in this town getting to the postseason. But coming up next, we'll talk more. J.J. Piccolo, GM, was on with Cody and Gold. We'll talk about that. We'll get into training camp here mid-hour. So Q and J.J. Piccolo next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Day 9, Chiefs training camp in the books. Back in pads today. They were without pads 2 days ago. Had yesterday off. Five guys left the field today with small to moderate injuries. Looks like some will be right. Some of the notables, Nick Bolton with the elbow. But Kadarius Toney, the foot. I haven't heard the latest on him. Have you? Maybe we never know.
I have not. I heard it was the ankle.
Foot area.
I haven't heard anything about it. I mean, look, I don't think anybody's surprised by this news. It's unfortunate for him, but I mean, I think we know who he is, and you know, unfortunately, this is who he is. So
We'll see. But Andy Reid,
hopefully he's all right, though.
I have Andy Reid's updates on the injuries coming up in just a little bit. But yeah, the ankle foot area there for Kadarius Toney. But regardless, J.J. Piccolo talked, and we'll talk more about the Chiefs. There's a text on here about Xavier Worthy that I'll get to in our next segment. But as far as the trades are concerned, what the Kansas City Royals did, got rave reviews, MLB Network, you name it, because it was people that could help the Royals. Paul DeJong comes over. Normally a shortstop, but of course going to play third base here. Michael Lorenzen, the pitcher, part of that. Lucas Ersig, the pitch today, that can hit 100 miles an hour. And Hunter Harvey, and of course you've seen him around as well. Alec Marsh sent back to the minor leagues, so we'll expect Michael Lorenzen from the Rangers to be in the rotation. But here's J.J. Piccolo when he joined Cody and Gold today on the addition of Michael Lorenzen.
Well, he's pitched out of the bullpen before. You know, I think our acquisition was with the thought that he's going to make starts for us, more so because we're very conscious of the innings that have been pitched by our current starters. There's a couple that are still, we think, very young in their careers, and they're going to start getting into territories they've never been in before. So if there's a way that we can manage this and really keep guys fresh, you know, keep them as strong as they can possibly be all the way through September and hopefully into October. You know, Michael gives us a chance to do that. Michael Lorenzen gives us a chance to do that. But it's also knowing that he can go in the bullpen and be an effective reliever as well. So he's a veteran. He likes to win. He sort of fits in with the personalities we have on the team. His background's similar. He's a team guy. So whatever role it is, we know he's willing to fill it. But he has made 18 starts this year, and that doesn't go unnoticed.
Seems like the Royals and the Rangers, that good relationship with Chris Young and Dayton Moore paying off just like it did with Cole Reagans. Also, the Oakland Athletics, where Lucas Ursa gets traded from. And, of course, the White Sox, that's just loaded with Royals people in their front office. But here's JJ on Lucas Ursa. Did, by the way, pitch today, hitting 100 miles an hour on the mound.
Well, he's done it this year. I mean, they have Mason Miller out there in Oakland, who's probably the best in the game right now. So he was pitching mostly in the eighth inning. But when Mason got hurt last week, Lucas stepped in and closed a couple games. So he doesn't have a lot of experience doing it, but he has the stuff to do it. He's pitching the eighth inning. And when you look at just how closers are developed, most of them start in the seventh inning, then they go to the eighth inning, and then eventually they get to the ninth inning. There's a process that takes place with every great closer in the game, and Lucas is on that trail. And the same can be said about Hunter Harvey. You know, he's behind Finnegan. He was a setup guy in Washington. He had done it very well for a couple of years. He's going to have the opportunity to close. But the fact that neither one has truly been a closer, they don't have 30 saves in their back pocket in the past, we're just going to let that develop. I'm just glad, and the staff is glad, that we have two guys that now can pitch in the back end, and however it works out, it works out. But they're team guys. They get it. They're going to pitch wherever Q says you're going in. And hopefully by the end of the season, something is established and we have some consistency there.
Same Long doing his deal now, but expect Lucas Ursig to be right in there. Also, of course, Hunter Harvey came earlier with the Kansas City Royals, and JJ's addressed him. But here was JJ on Paul DeJong that literally went from the White Sox dugout straight over to the Kansas City dugout.
Well, one thing we've talked about, and we'll see how it develops, but, you know, potentially playing some left field if needed. You know, third base is the most obvious spot where he should get some time. We got a guy named Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop, so he's not going to play shortstop. So he'll get some time at third base. We'll mix him in at second base. It's part of the rotation that we run. It's not a set number of days a week. It's just matchup related. You know, who's on the mound? Who do they have in the bullpen? Who do we want coming off the bench? But he's going to factor in, whether it's a third, potentially in left, DH, or bat off the bench. He's just going to be part of the team and, you know, help us operate the way we want to operate.
Nice bat coming off the bench. Has 14 postseason games under his belt. Here was Matt Quatrero, the Royals manager, this morning on Fesco in the Morning about how they plan to use Paul DeJong.
Well, I told him, I said, you know, we don't have a lot of reps at short here for you, yeah. You know, and that's he understood. Like I said, he said, I'll do anything, you know, so the majority of his career has been at short. He's been playing third most of this month. He's played a little bit of second in the past. So we're gonna get him at third, and Mikel can jump to second at times because, like I said, Massey's not going to be in there every day. And then we'll start working him out. We started working him out at second yesterday to get him comfortable there. And then we'll see if he can, he's never done it in his career, but if he can play a little bit of outfield, we'll see how that goes. You know, he's a really good athlete. He's a major league shortstop. So I don't have any doubt he could. It's just a matter of getting him comfortable before we do that. But more than anything, he provides power, a right-handed power bat, whether he's in the lineup or on the bench.
Well, he's mostly played shortstops, played some third base, was at third base today for the Royals, but expect that bat to be used at different times for the Royals. But I like their deals. They weren't selling off. They went out and added pieces. They went in and added pieces for the stretch run. I think we're having a hell of a lot of fun with the Kansas City Royals.
Well, it made no sense for them to sell off because they were competitive. They were in the playoff race. So that didn't make any sense. The question was really, how aggressive were they going to be at the deadline? Were they going to be aggressive and go out and get a good bullpen arm? Were they going to be aggressive and go and get another position player? And, you know, I think you only traded one top 10 prospect that you have.
Yeah, for Hunter Harvey.
Those two trades, actually two, because you did send one with Ortega. But I really like what they were able to get in these trades. I think you got a couple good bullpen arms. You did get a guy who could be a potential starter.
And you had two guys hurt in one game, so right. They had to make these.
Yeah,
moves.
And you went and got a guy who can kind of be a good utility player. Maybe he does kind of play different infield spots. Maybe he is good enough to go play in the outfield. He has not played in the outfield, so that's certainly something that is going to be a big question mark, but maybe he can take to it. I certainly think if they're going to test him out, they think he's a good enough athlete, and the Royals tend to be one of those teams where if you're going to be on their roster, unless you're going to play like first base or DH or catcher, you're probably going to be a good athlete anyway, so I think maybe there is hope that he could do that. We'll see, but I just like the fact that they didn't have to sell the farm in order to go and get the kind of help that they needed.
He's been a DH one game this year, pinch hit seven times, started at shortstop 89 times. Today was his 12th start at third base. Doesn't have experience since 2017 with the Cardinals when he played 20 games at first base. But primarily, he's been a shortstop, but of course has been playing third base as well. Coming up next, though, we'll address that text on Xavier Worthy here from Andy Reid, giving the latest updates on the injuries from today's training camp practices. We'll get to the Chiefs next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app, brought to you by Twin Peaks Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views.
Back to Royals in a bit. Jay Binkley, Chris Unocero from Character Concerns. We're not talking NFL draft, but if you want to hear about the rookies, you can download the latest podcast wherever you download your podcast, or right at 610sports.com under 435 Podcast Network under Character Concerns. Do you have any character concerns, Chris?
No.
Were you ever a character concern?
Maybe when I was younger, yeah.
But not at this point. We'll get to Andy Reid, what he had to say at Chiefs camp today. Isn't it funny, 39 practices in. You know, they've had the pads on now for, 4 days? First preseason game, August 10th. Just seems like yesterday they got the rings, you know what I mean? Everything bleeds together when you play that long like the Chiefs do every year.
Yeah, they just play so many games now. We just
get used to it.
Yeah, we just get used to it. The offseason's a lot shorter.
From the text line, 913-586-7610, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line says, Saul Worthy was getting shoved around today during team, and there was one clip on that. Do you guys think there's just a rookie thing, taking lumps for grade D, or him being lighter in weight? I think sometimes people get caught up with one clip. Certainly, I don't think that's the way Xavier Worthy plays. He's an extremely tough dude. It's going to happen. This extremely aggressive defense, you're going to get knocked around. If linebackers have a chance to hit you, they're going to hit you. And they're going to welcome you to the NFL. But you know what? Getting knocked down just makes you tougher and stronger for the long term. And, of course, he stepped right on the field at Texas, and boom, as a freshman, 1,000 yards ready to go and never missed a game when he was there.
Look, he didn't get killed when he was in college. He was going up against guys that were bigger than him when he was in college. There's some teams out there that do run a lot of man coverage. They'll pressure at the line of scrimmage because they got the athletes to do it. That was never really a concern with him. Yeah, he's going to get knocked around from time to time. Tyreek Hill got knocked around when he played this defense last year in the playoffs and during the regular season. It's just like, this is what's going to happen when you do play physical defenses that are capable of pressing at the line of scrimmage, jamming these receivers and throwing the timing off. That's just going to be part of the game here.
No, it is.
It's going to happen with Xavier Worthy. I don't think you really need to worry about it, because if you've watched enough film, you know that his size is not a detriment to him producing.
And they're still throwing downfield to him almost every single practice, trying to get that out. But it's going to be, and not only that, he's just a great route runner as well. He's very smart. We'll see. I think you'll see the best of Xavier Worthy. I'm excited about seeing the way they use him during the regular season as Mahomes starts airing it out.
And the Chiefs are going to be smart with how they use him because of his size. One of the things they did with Tyreek Hill when he was here is you didn't see him get jammed at the line of scrimmage like this all the time. It's because they moved him around a lot. It's the same thing that he's doing in Miami right now. they'll do that cheat motion where they'll move. He'll start moving laterally in a motion. They snap the ball, and he basically gets a running head start on it, whatever route he's going to run. Usually, it's like a post route or an in route. But like they do all these sorts of things so that they can get around him being pressed at the line of scrimmage. And you know who was doing that with Tyreek Hill first? It was Andy Reid. Andy Reid was doing that orbit motion with him all the time. So
was used mainly on returns, and they started increasing his role.
I'm not concerned about that. He's been in camp now for almost 2 weeks, and this is the first time we've seen a clip where he just got absolutely trucked out there.
I mean, it's going to happen.
Running around.
Like, it happens to almost everybody, to be honest with you, except for quarterbacks.
Right. It's going to be a part of the game. I'm not freaking out about it. Like, if you are freaking out about it, just chill. It's not that big a deal. It'd be different if we were seeing this all camp, but we saw this on the fourth padded practice. That means you have three other padded practices that he's been a part of.
And if your head's not on a swivel, you're going to get knocked.
Yeah, and like he'll learn from that. He'll be careful with that. Like, that's a learning experience for him. Again, there's not that many teams that are capable of pressing receivers at the line of scrimmage the way that the Chiefs can. So I'm not getting too caught up on that. Like, the Chiefs will find a way around the physicality throwing him off of his game.
It's always like that. I remember as a freshman, you know, when you start playing, the seniors would knock you down, but then it didn't happen again. Like, it happened initially because your head's not on a swivel. Then guess what? You learn to keep your head on a swivel, and you learn to understand where and when you are on the field and what you're doing. But Andy Reid spoke today. There's five guys that ended up leaving practice, but Andy Reid gives the latest on that, plus the battle at tackle with Kingsley Suamatia and Wanye Morris. And Wanye kind of started off as the starter, and then they put the pads on, and it's been Kingsley. Kingsley again today.
As far as the injuries go, Nazi didn't practice today. Justin and both Justins, Reed and Watson, had a couple guys get nicked in Gathings with a hamstring, Tony, ankle. Chu had an ankle, McCade, ankle, and Bolton got his elbow banged up. All in all, though, good practice, a lot of good work. Guys are moving around, good challenging, both sides of the ball against each other. Got a lot of one versus one, two versus two work in today. So it was positive practice. Anyways, time's yours.
I couldn't hear you when we were talking about Nick Bolton's injury.
Yeah, he tweaked his elbow, yeah. Just kind of caught him, you know, in between two guys.
You guys look like you did the long drive out there today, and I know a lot of guys have talked about that and how important it is. You like that drill during camp. Just kind of explain what's so good about that.
Yeah, we just do different situations with it. And the ones get quite a few reps, you know, with it. And it's playing the game is really what it is. So, but we have certain situations we work through. Yeah.
Coach, Max mentioned the other day that he's still waiting for someone to step up behind McDuffie at the quarterback position. But with so many injuries, how difficult has it been to properly evaluate that position?
Well, it's been good for the young guys to get some reps in there. You know, Watson came back, got some reps today. So, you know, getting back in the swing of things. So if he starts working in, that'll be a positive. But for the young guys, the Josephs, you know, the world there, they all get a look. You know, and so that's good work for them.
How about the career path of Mike Dana? He's going to be here at the 10 a little while. Can you just speak to that and how much improvement you expect?
Yeah, Mike Dana, number one, is a great kid, tremendous worker, doesn't say a word, he just works, and plays his heart out every play. So if you want to call him a worker bee, he's a worker bee, man. He comes to work every day and busts his tail.
What adjustments, Coach, were made to maximize your time in the heat? What adjustments were made to maximize your time in the heat while minimizing any impact to the players given the
run? Yeah, so we do a lot beforehand, trying to make sure the guys are hydrated so they're not coming out. We don't have very many of the hydration issues, which is positive. Our trainers do a nice job with that. And then during practice, we water break them. So we'll go a certain number of plays, and then you'll see the people run the water in and give them a quick shot and then hop back out.
We'll also get Nico today. Just how impressive you've been year to year with his development.
Yeah, he's getting better every rep he gets. So that's a positive thing for us. Yeah.
I was curious. You have a couple of members of your offensive staff, position coaches, who are going into their second year with the team. I'm just curious,
your opinion on their growth and just how they've done over
looks. Yeah, it's always smoother that second year once you've gone through it the first time. So they hit the ground running or do a nice job with it. Yeah.
You talked about some of the defensive injuries that gives you a young guy a chance to show you what they can do, but you're also trying to get ready for a season two. With all the defensive guys who are out, at what point does that start to affect your preparation?
I think we're okay at this point, Adam. They'll be back. They'll be back here, and they'll have time to work. So I think we'll be fine there.
Just considering the speed that you've added, I guess just year to year, obviously you won't tell details, but how much is this game, how much is changing as far as what you guys
are? Yeah, not a ton changing. And we do, I mean, you know, we have speed, but, you know, we're playing. We're just using our offense and going. So not a whole lot new.
I guess just as they come on, what have you learned so far about Kingsley and Wanya the more you see them and sorting out that position?
Yeah, I love the compete. Both of them are competing their tails off. I feel comfortable with both of them right at this point where they're at. They just got to keep working and working to get better every day, you know. So that's what they're doing. That's the mindset they're in.
Hey, Coach, you got a deep receiver room. KT goes down. How much wiggle room does he have with depth trying to maximize the roster?
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, you want to be there every day. And so anytime you miss, you miss, especially during install days, you know, you're missing a load there. So, but that he's got to take care of what he's got and get himself back out there when he can.
Can you share what you said to him? I saw you talk to him for a quick second when he went down.
Yeah. Well, at that time, I didn't know he was banged up, but I was just, you know, let's keep rolling. He had a play before that, and he went up to get it. I think that's probably where he did get hurt, but I didn't know that at the time. But just stay on top of it. Just keep squeezing.
So here's Andy Reid on several different position battles. It is going to be interesting to see how many wide receivers that they keep, and does this hurt Kadarius Toney going forward if he's not there with the installs and also the battle left tackle? We'll address that stuff next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
And welcome back. Jim Inkley, Chris Inocero. Andy Reid gave the injury updates. Nothing to really be concerned about. I will say this, though. I do think it's imperative for Kadarius Toney to get back on the field. Would you say by things, you know, like, hey, a lot of installs put out today, you got to be out on the field. You got to be on the football field. I think that was kind of a shot to him, but kind of like, we need you out here, man.
Only if they're planning on making him a prominent part of the offense.
He seems to be a guy getting a lot of reps. And
I think they're trying to see if they still have something in him.
I think so, a little bit. But,
what we've heard is he's not been that impressive in camp. The biggest story about him was them using him as a running back.
And this is why I don't want him to be a running back. Exhibit A.
Oh, I'm fine with him being a running back because I think there's lower stakes to it than him being a wide receiver. I think he could hurt the team less because I don't think he's going
to
get a ton
of himself more.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think he's going to get a ton of touches anyway. So I'm cool with him getting the ball in a safer way as a running back than with him getting the ball as a wide receiver because we've seen the damage he can do as a wide receiver to the Chiefs. So I'm fine with him being in the running back role. I don't think he'll get a ton of touches anyways. So I don't think he's really in a position to hurt the team. But yeah, like if for him, for his sake of making the team, yes, this is a pretty tough injury there. But I still think just based off of what we've heard from the team, I think his spot's safe unless something catastrophic happens with him or someone else just shoots up the board so much that they can't afford to miss out on that player over Kadarius Toney.
Nico's kind of been that guy. He's a guy, a lot of guys spoke today. A lot of guys are rooting for him.
Right, but we're not
going to return.
We're not seeing like hype for like Nico breaking into like the top three.
Not Justin Ross hype.
No, and yeah, he's not getting that kind of hype. And so like that's to me the reason why like if Nico makes the team, he'll be like the last receiver on the roster. He will be at he'll be right there on the bubble from the very beginning. I kind of think that Kadarius Toney is a little bit safer than that just because of how much they spent to get him and just because you can tell that they still think very highly of him.
There's a reason
even
why
though
he's
there's
still
issues.
Here.
Yeah, there's a reason why he's still here. Because I think in most teams in that scenario after what happened last year would have cut loose with a player like that.
100% they would have. But most of the receivers Andy Reid's ever kept here has been six, except for last year he kept seven. I'm expecting the Chiefs to end camp with seven receivers, Chris.
I think it's very possible, yeah.
And we look at Rashee Rice on the team. Obviously, you're going to have Xavier Worthy on the team. Well, Kadarius Toney, at this point, I put Kadarius Toney, or Justin Watson on the team. And then you're down to Nico, Justin Ross, Sky Moore, and Nico Remigio. I mean, and then Montrell Washington. You're down to some of those guys.
Yeah, I think Kadarius is safe. The question is, what happens with Remigio? Do they keep seven? I mean, you know, does Sky Moore somehow rocket up the depth chart now that Kadarius has got an injury? Does he take advantage of more reps possibly? I mean, I don't think so. I think at this point now I would have Sky Moore off the team, which, you know, is unfortunate because he's going into the third year of his rookie contract.
He had a better day at camp today, but he's not had a good camp overall.
He's not had a good camp overall, and so he's got a long ways to go. He can he's still got time. They still have weeks until they have to make cuts, and not only that, but I definitely think they're going to give him every opportunity here in the preseason to try and make the team. So really it's going to be incumbent upon him to improve his game and really stand out. And he's got a real tough assignment because this is a really good defense that he's going up against. But still, like, you're going to play good defenses every year in the NFL. So if you want to make this roster and be a contributor, especially as a former second-round pick, you got to go out there and do what you got to do.
Looks like Trent McDuffie being the inside a lot again today.
Yeah,
Joseph's getting his run with the ones, man. He's getting a lot of run at corner.
And Kelvin's kind of been, I think, the big surprise for camp because he's just come out of nowhere.
I think he's been one of the biggest surprises.
Certainly. I definitely think that he's going to get every opportunity to make the roster. The Chiefs love having good quarterback depth, especially because you've had some injuries here with like Jalen Watson, who just came off the PUP list today. So that's cool, but Jalen's not going to be in game shape for a little while. He's still got to get back in form.
Coming off that labrum.
Yeah, he's coming off the labrum injury. So, you know, there's going to be plenty of opportunities, I think, for Kelvin Joseph to continue to show what he's been showing thus far.
No question. He also addressed Kingsley. Some of you and I have been watching Kingsley Suamatia and Wanya Morris. Obviously, left tackle battle. We'll discuss that after the break.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.